welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, I'm really glad you have decided to join us. So as we get closer to November 8th and Election Day, there are a lot of congressional races here in Michigan that are heating up in parts of West Michigan and in Macomb County in particular. The races appear to be toss-ups, and you've got several others that could be close coming into November 8th. The 12th Congressional District doesn't appear to be quite like that, though. Businessman and Republican Stephen Elliott is up against Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who is now a household name and has grown her profile well beyond her district and our state. But despite Tlaib being the favorite, given the overwhelming demographic of the district that she's running in, it's still under contention, and it is ultimately up to voters to decide now and up to Election Day who is going to be the candidate who will represent them in Washington. Stephen Elliott is a veteran. He's a business owner and tattoo artist, and he says he's running as an American patriot. He believes we need to lower crime, lower taxes, and tighten up the southern border. A little later in the hour, we are going to talk with Congresswoman Tlaib about why she's running for re-election. Also talk about the 4 years that she has already been in office. But right now, we want to get to know her opponent on November 8th, Stephen Elliott. We've invited him here to talk about why he's running for Congress, what he hopes to accomplish if he's elected, and what he thinks his chances are of beating his opponent. Stephen Elliott, it's really great to meet you. Welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen, and thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate it. I would like to make one small correction.
Sure.
I am not a tattoo artist. That is just something that they posted in the MLive article to kind of lower my credibility or my to be able to represent the district. I actually owned multiple tattoo locations that I grew over 20 years, and
okay.
I sold those last year, and I currently own a medical spa and an IV center. So,
okay. That's an important correction. So when you owned the tattoo shops, were you a tattoo artist?
I did tattoo for a short time,
but that
is not really what I am. And
I was
an entrepreneur who got into the tattoo business and scaled that over 20 years and
grew that
into supplies and medical supplies. And then that turned into doing tattoo removal. And like I said, right now I'm strictly own a full medical facial aesthetic center and an IV center. So that was just something that MLive posted in their article to kind of make me look less qualified for the position.
Okay, well, I got to say, don't sleep on tattoo artists. I'm a big fan, and I've got a few myself, so that, I don't see that as a way of criticizing someone by saying they're a tattoo artist, but you're right, it's important to be accurate with that. So,
I think current representation of who I really am and what my qualifications are and what I can bring to the district with fiscal responsibility, making logical common sense decisions like I have over the last 21 years, is really important to if we're looking at true representation, the community needs to know exactly who would be representing them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start there. Tell us who you are, why you're running for Congress, and why you think you'd be the right fit to represent this new 12th congressional district.
Yeah, well, I'm running for Congress because after 20 years of being in business and just seeing what's going on with the economy, and really when I got out of after I sold my company, you know, watching the economy started to go down, inflation rise, the cost of living go up. And I think it was time for a change. And, you know, I decided to run in this particular district to run against Rashida Tlaib because I believe some of her policies and the things that she tries to push on the congressional level is the complete opposite of what helps the local average American family when it comes to taxes, when it comes to wages, when it comes to inflation, when it comes to, you know, food costs, the policies that she represents don't really represent the people of the 12th district. Doesn't represent Michigan, and really doesn't represent American values.
So, give me some specifics there. What policies are you referring to?
Asking Jamie Dimon and all the other banks to stop funding fossil fuel would just increase the cost of gas prices even more, which would continue to hurt the lower and middle income class people. You know, gas prices are over double what they were 2 years ago. So if you're making less than $30,000 to $40,000 a year, but now you're paying $20 to $30 more a week at the pump, you know, which is $120 a month, we're looking at $1,500 more a year, and that's post-tax money. You know, that's the difference between someone being able to go on vacation, and with the cost of with the rising inflation, the cost of food, now it's coming down to people deciding if they're going to even eat, if they're going to. You know, there's talk, and I've heard some news and some articles that I've read about people considering not doing Thanksgiving this year because they just can't afford to purchase that extra meal. Mm.
So I know what policy you're talking about there, which is, of course, saying, look, we've got to get away from fossil fuels onto renewables and alternative energy. Mm-hmm. My first question is whether you think there's a value in doing that. Of course, nobody wants gas prices to be higher, but the push toward alternatives is one of the things that is making, you know, oil less in demand, and it's making the price go up. How do you balance those two?
Well, I don't think oil is less in demand. I just think we have less of it right now. You know, turning off the Keystone pipeline basically just shut, you know, created a supply and demand issue. But I do think, you know, everything, you know, switching into renewable energies is not a bad thing. And it can and should be done, but it needs to be done over time. You know, it took an entire generation to build a fossil fuel economy. So to just cut it off, which is going to increase the amount or the cost of gas, we don't really have the infrastructure set up. We don't have the education system set up yet to be able to provide the infrastructure for renewable energies. So what we need to do is we need to have an actual plan over a legitimate period of time in a transition where we're actually getting these colleges and these schools to start training on careers and jobs for renewable energies. And we start building an infrastructure for renewable energies. If we all go to electric tomorrow, we couldn't handle it. If something happened like in Florida, everybody would be stuck. So we need to have a plan and a process, and we need to do that over time.
Well, isn't that what the legislation that just passed does? It over time moves us away from fossil fuels, encourages development and technology that will allow us to get to alternatives?
But not if we're cutting off fossil fuels right away. If we're cutting it off right away, it increases. It should be it has to be over time.
Okay, so my second question is, you say that that's the reason that gas prices are higher. The cost per barrel of crude has been pretty constant across a long period of time now. And if you go back to the last time they were where they are now, gas prices were almost $2 a gallon cheaper than they are now. So the companies that produce and distribute and refine the oil are actually just charging us more for something that they charged us less for a decade ago. What's your answer to that? And do you think that we have a responsibility to say to them, hey, this is price gouging?
Well, I don't think it's price gouging when we actually turned off the Keystone pipeline and we cut our own demand down. You know, 2 years ago, we were energy independent. We were actually exporting oil. So based on administration policies, by cutting out land leases, allowing these companies to produce more oil to bring the cost down, it becomes into a supply and demand issue. So if we can't manufacture, if we're manufacturing more, then we have more than the demand, that's going to bring the price down. But when we're manufacturing less, it's going to bring the price up.
But again, the cost to the producers is the same as it was when gas prices were cheaper. So what explains why they are $2 a gallon higher right now? That doesn't make sense.
Well, because it's the ability to produce. They cannot produce enough. If we're not able to produce as much as we need to produce.
If the cost to them is the same as it was when gas was $2 cheaper, why is it $2 more?
Because we're using more. We don't have enough. You know what I'm saying? I understand what you're saying. The cost to produce is the same, but if you're not producing enough, it's a supply and demand issue.
But it's not a supply and demand issue. There's enough. There is not enough for
selling off.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would disagree with that, and this is not something that really is a main focal point in what's going on in the economy or going on in the food prices.
Well, you said that gas prices are a focal point of the economy, and it's
a kitchen table issue.
We were
energy independent 2 years ago. So we can't blame the oil companies for us not being energy independent. We have to blame the administration for changing the policies and executive orders. This is not a gas company price. That's a deflate. The minute that we shut down the Keystone pipelines, the minute the gas prices went up. When we stopped exporting oil and having to start importing oil, the gas prices went up.
Yeah. Okay, I want to give you a chance to talk about some of the other things that you think that she's doing that are, as you said, un-American. I think that's a pretty strong word to use. Tell me what Rashida Tlaib is doing that you would characterize it that way.
Well, there's a lot of things. She's not representing the American people. She's not representing the district. We talk about one of the biggest issues in the district and just about every school board is what's going on with the children and what we're teaching our children, and we're not protecting them. We're focusing more on the pronouns and genders in these books versus educating our children with math and science and English and reading and writing so that they can they can prepare themselves for college and they can prepare themselves for the future and what's going on in the schools. Parents just want kids to go to school and learn and have and let them raise their children. And she's one of the leading Congress people on this. And it's and same with the defund the police. You know, I was in Detroit talking to voters, and the first thing that we talked to voters in Detroit, and what is the most important issue to most of the voters that I talked to in Detroit is they need more police down there. So defunding the police and making streets more unsafe as crime rises, as carjacking rises, as murder rises, as robbery rises, we start talking about defunding the police. You know, that's a very, I think that's a very un-American and a very unsafe thing.
So first of all, crime is on a long-term downward trend. There are certain crimes that have increased over the last couple of years, mostly tied to, we think, and we won't know for some time because it takes a while to determine, you know, the cause of increase or decrease in crime. But lots of people think that the pandemic had a lot to do with the increase in crime. And the idea of defunding the police is not about eliminating police officers so much as it is about augmenting the services that we provide for people so that you don't have police officers, for instance, responding when you have someone who's maybe having a mental health breakdown and there's somebody there to help that person rather than somebody to arrest that person. And as we saw in Detroit just a few weeks ago, end up having killed that person. You don't believe that police need change and reform in this country, which is what that whole movement is about?
Well, when I talk to the voters down there in the city of Detroit, and I ask them, what is the most important issue to your community? And the first thing they said is, we need more police down here. This is what the voters in Detroit, in the district, are saying. This isn't what
This is what the people you've talked to have said. I don't think you can characterize that as what people in Detroit think, but I hear what you're saying.
And it's across the board. I've talked to many people, many voters in the district. I've talked to many people in Detroit. You know, in the first, they want more police. They want more. They want safer streets. They want businesses to be able to come down there. They want their kids to be able to play in the street, mm-hmm. and they can't. When it's 2 hours to get a responding call, you know, when businesses won't go down there and open up because of crime, and there's no protection for their staff, for their employees, as a business owner, it's very hard to invest in those areas when you know that your investment is not protected. And the citizens in that area want police presence. They want safer communities. You know, in this district, the 12th Congressional District goes from southern Oakland County all the way down past Dearborn, and it's completely different. So why is it safer in some communities and not in others? Why? Because of police presence.
I want to talk about some of the other things that you want to do. You've focused a little on the southern border, and you say we need to tighten that up. Talk about why you feel that's an important issue to people in the 12th Congressional District here in Michigan.
Well, it's an important issue to everybody in the United States. We're allowing 200,000 people a month to come through the southern border. Now, I am very much pro-legal immigration, very much pro. My fiance is a legal immigrant. She's an American citizen from Albania. I am very much pro-legal, but the southern border, allowing these people to just walk across the border, it's not only unsafe, as the large amount of fentanyl and sex trafficking that's going on at the southern border, it also is a big drain on the community, and it's a big drain on the American taxpayer. You know, we are housing these people. We are giving them cell phones. I was at a speaking event last night where they're talking, it's still very hard to get baby formula on the shelves, but down at the southern border, there is baby formula for the people coming across the southern border.
So what's your solution? What's your solution? You have people who want to come to this country, as your wife did,
and she came legally.
What's the process to allow more people to come legally?
Well, they go through the process that we currently have. They file paperwork. There's steps in. Already in process to come to this country legally. We allow millions of people.
You wouldn't change the system at all to deal with the number of people who want to come, who find it very difficult, if not impossible, to get into the country and then to become citizens.
Well, I disagree, because there are a lot of people that come to this country legally, they end up coming from overseas. They're not just coming from across the southern border. But when you're just allowing people,
but you're okay with the rules that determine who can do that. Not everybody can do that. You agree with that, correct? Not everyone is welcome.
Well, it just, when you invite people to come from this, when you invite people to come and live, what are they bringing to the community?
Well,
are they coming from the southern border? Are they bringing resources? Are they bringing labor? Are they actually contributing to the community? Or are they coming here and get on government services? They're getting government health care. They're giving maybe government checks. There's a big difference where when someone comes over.
And how would you set up the rules to determine that? To determine who's coming for what reason?
Well, there's already rules in place for that. And I don't know the entire immigration system, but what I do know is we cannot handle an infrastructure of having 200,000 people a month come through. We just don't have the services set up for that. We don't have the infrastructure. People are living in tent cities. Mm-hmm. Rapes and murders are up on the southern border. You have Border Patrol agents getting killed. It's just not open the floodgates and welcome everybody in, as we're catching cartel members, as we're catching known terrorists, as we have enough.
So how would you close that off?
We would just shut it down like it was prior to the Biden administration. The border was closed prior to the border.
That's actually not so. I mean, it was.
Well, we had about 30,000 people a month coming through, and now we have about 200,000 a month.
Right. So it wasn't closed before. We've had I mean, we've had a border issue, if you want to call it that, for a long time, and the Trump administration made it worse in many regards.
I know exactly about the border situation because when I was in the Marine Corps, I was down on the southern border tracking drug smugglers and illegal immigrants. This isn't a new problem, but you need to control the flow of people coming in so you can vet those people coming in and make sure that they're coming in for the right reasons. We don't need drug dealers coming in. We don't need sex traffickers coming in. We don't need enough fentanyl to kill everybody in the United States, kill our children.
Well, I think everybody agrees with that, but
how do you vet that at 200,000 people a month?
I think a lot of people say we need broad scale immigration reform to deal with the number of people who want to come legally, mm-hmm. who have every reason to want to come, and then to stop the illegal immigration. But you're saying you wouldn't change the rules, that you think the rules are the way they should be.
I'm not saying that at all, because I explained to you, I don't know every rule, and okay. I don't know every reason, and I don't know, you know, it's a very hard thing to look at and see what works, what doesn't, and everything can be, you know, improved on. There's nothing in that is, hey, this is the best way and we're going to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. But I think just opening the borders does not allow us to really build a solid immigration plan to allow people to come over and be able to do what, you know, this country was designed to do, to come over here and have all the opportunities in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the only country in the world that you can come over and be a first generation billionaire. And that's amazing. Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to end our time soon, but I want to give you a chance to talk just a little about what you think you need to do in the next couple of weeks to win this race. This is an overwhelmingly Democratic district. I give you all the credit in the world for filing as a Republican and running. What makes Stephen Elliott the next congressperson from this area?
What makes Stephen Elliott the next congressperson from this area? Stephen Elliott brings common sense, reform and decisions back to the 12th congressional district. It focuses on American values. It focuses on lowering gas prices. It focuses on the American family being able to have control over their own children and what their children learn. It has it helps the American family be able to live a good life and have affordable gas prices, affordable housing, and affordable food. And I think that's what's really most important to most Americans, and not anti-Israel and all of these very hardcore socialist left policies that really don't help anybody in the 12th district. They don't help anybody to raise a family, be able to put money away for college, and just, you know, people are making decisions on if they need to eat or not. And this is not exactly what needs to happen. And Congress needs smart people like myself who are, you know, for the last 20 years have just been making logical, unemotional decisions about money, and instead of just writing checks with other people's money.
Okay. All right. So, Stephen Elliott, it was really great to have you here. I really do appreciate you coming and sharing your ideas with our listeners, and we wish you good luck in the next couple of weeks, last couple of weeks of the election.
Thank you, Stephen. I really appreciate your time today.
Sure. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to hear about the flip side of this race to be the first congressperson representing this new 12th congressional district. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, who represents the 13th congressional district right now and is running to be the congresswoman from the 12th district, is going to join us to talk about her ideas, but also to talk about the last 4 years that she has been in Congress. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.